go home and learn Wisconsin law. And Illinois. No. A joke. All right. 092851, case number 7, Annette Goble versus Michael Astrew. Okay. Hello, Mr. Balathoff.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Take your time.
Apologize.
No. My God. You know, everyone worries that the time, is running as you...
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, James Balanoff on behalf of the appellant, Annette Goble. Mrs. Goble was denied Social Security benefits despite the fact that she suffered from very serious fibromyalgia and a spinal condition which impaired the use of her right hand for years prior to her application. She was treated with heavy narcotics, methadone, for 6 years or nearly 6 years, which was replaced with morphine shortly before the hearing. Somehow the ALJ managed to basically ignore all of that. There are numerous errors in the decision that basically contribute to three overriding sort of legal errors. First of all, in regard to the credibility of claimant's testimony, the ALJ simply ignored the guidelines of SSR 96-7P. And in determining the RFC that she found, there really is no substantial evidence for that RFC. And this culminated basically in an erroneous Step 5 determination. And I'd like to take that point up first. The Step 5 determination was that she could do. The ALJ posed a hypothetical question to the vocational expert with basically a light RFC with limitations on reaching overhead and other limitations. The ALJ said, well, if she could do occasional reaching overhead, to that limitation, the VE offered jobs which require not occasional but require frequent reaching. So even if we credit the ALJ's RFC, it does not lead to an appropriate Step 5 determination because the jobs the VE testified to can't be done under that RFC. Moreover, that RFC is completely inappropriate given the facts here because it leaves out several very important impairments. In addition to ignoring the effects of the fibromyalgia, the pain, the medication, and so forth, the existence of a serious spinal condition, which had been diagnosed years earlier by multiple doctors, which impairs the use of her right hand, was ignored in the RFC, other than to say she couldn't do overhead lifting. In fact, she testified to frequent dropping of things, to severe pain with that arm. That's supported by objective findings, several of them. Furthermore, the consultative examiner, the PhD psychologist employed by the government, their own expert, said that the claimant could not tolerate work stresses. The ALJ managed to brush this off as well, simply saying, well, it's based in part on the claimant's indication that she had pain, and this is a psychologist. But that's the whole essence of fibromyalgia, and I think the leading case in this area, leading Seventh Circuit case, is Sarche, which points out that fibromyalgia is not something that can be diagnosed by objective signs other than the basic diagnosis, which is done clinically, a certain number of tender points and so forth. Once that diagnosis is made, the only way to determine the severity of it is essentially the patient's self-report of pain. And this is where in many respects, I think the decision falls down the most because the record is replete with indications that she was in severe pain the whole time. You don't give methadone to someone. You don't give morphine to someone who doesn't have severe pain. Multiple doctors did that because they understood that her pain was that severe. She did things like changing her occupation. She had been an LPN, couldn't handle that work. While she was struggling with this, she sought lighter work. She worked as a teacher's assistant. She couldn't do that either. They moved. They moved from Minnesota to Utah because they believed, that is Mr. Scoble and her husband, that perhaps the climate there would be beneficial to the fibromyalgia, to be away from the very cold weather in Minnesota. That didn't work out. They came back after 6 months.
Her condition somewhat improved.
It did, somewhat. Indeed it did.
Why isn't it appropriate for the ALJ to consider that?
Well, I think it is appropriate for the ALJ to consider that this person does better in a warmer climate. But that doesn't make her not disabled. And I think the ALJ actually misused that move. She said, well, because she can move from one state to another, she's not disabled. But in fact, when they did the move, she described that she sometimes sat in the front seat while her husband drove, and a lot of the way on the trip out to Utah, she had to lie down in the back seat. Someone who is not in severe pain doesn't really have to do that. The ALJ simply didn't take that into account, and basically she failed to adhere to the guidelines of 96 SSR 96.7P. I think that it's, and as well as disregarding the report of her own, or that is to say the government's psychological expert, there was complete disregard of the several treating physicians for no good reason, who said, for example, Dr. Iwu, the doctor who was treating her at the time of the hearing, he said, at this point in time, I do not believe she can engage in any substantial gainful activity and feel that this situation will persist for more than 12 months. It said earlier in the letter, Annette B. Goble is under my care and is being managed for chronic pain syndrome, primarily due to fibromyalgia, which is fairly crippling. Dr. Hadlin, who also treated her. Annette Goble has had long-standing fibromyalgia, has been on chronic pain management for years. The patient continues to have severe muscle pain. This is a treating physician. She has, in association with her muscle pain, a sleep disturbance which has been resistant to various treatment modalities. I believe the patient is unemployable. She is unable to sit, stand, bend, and or really function mentally in any type of employment situation secondary to her chronic pain syndrome and muscle tightness slash pain associated with the fibromyalgia. This is strong evidence, and the ALJ simply disregarded it. She relied medically, basically, on the testimony of the medical expert who is not a rheumatologist, and after all, Sarche indicates to us it's a rheumatologist is who can evaluate fibromyalgia, but she relied on his testimony. Unfortunately, this medical expert made a basic factual error. Apparently, he was not quite familiar enough with the record. He said, well, in response to counsel's cross-examination, asked him, could a serious spinal problem cause a problem with the use of the right hand and arm? He said, yes, something like that could, but I don't see any evidence of it in the record. Well, that's just wrong. It's just a factual error. There are multiple diagnoses of and indications of spinal problems. Dr. Nirad Vengsarkar said it was discussed with the patient that her pain is mainly related to the degeneration of the discs. However, surgery may not be the right option for her since many of her discs have worn out. Dr. Edry Kiyoski said she has cervical degenerative disc disease and radiculitis symptoms into the right arm primarily, with a thoracic herniated disc as well, and a diagnosis of fibromyalgia. Dr. Wendland, Christopher Wendland, says multiple level cervical spine degenerative disease with right greater than left arm pain. Dr. Wendland again, cervical spondylosis with right upper extremity radiculopathy.
One of the problems that the ALJ had with the record here is that your client has carried these diagnoses for a long time.
Yes.
And that she worked through them
for
a long time, and there was no evidence of some event or precipitating worsening of the condition that would justify a finding of disability here. At least that's how I read this.
That is what she said. That's what she said. And first, I think she's wrong on the worsening. One event, and I think there are multiple things, but one event is when they switch her from methadone to morphine, and indicating a worsening of the pain. But the idea that
because
some...
Do we know why that was done?
I'm sorry, what?
Do we know why that
I think it was because
done?
The methadone was ineffective.
Is that in the record?
I believe that is. That's her testimony, at least, that's why. The other thing
we
is that, that
a,
whole
we
idea...
Don't have a, medical opinion about
you know there may
done.
Be and I right offhand I don't know that there is, but it was obviously made by the doctors. It was the doctor's decision to do that. But the idea that someone can work for a while, particularly in fibromyalgia cases, and I think it's a law in the Seventh Circuit that basically you can't really hold that against somebody. We want to encourage people to try to work. After all, if she was just inclined to want to live on whatever she gets on Social Security, why would she do that? Why would she change occupations? Why would she move to Utah? Why would she do all of these things if she could simply work and continue working? Like most people, if she could work, she would have continued working. And there's really no evidence here. There's no evidence that this woman can work. I think it's simply a massive error, and I see I used up my time. I hope I can have a little bit of rebuttal.
I'll give you a minute, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Palaba. Mr. Martin, good morning.
Good morning, Judge. May it please the Court, John Martin on behalf of the Commissioner. And I think Judge Sykes has exactly the right point here. What was not pointed out in that oral argument was that Ms. Goble has an onset date of November 2004, and the question the ALJ therefore had to answer was, is there evidence that shows she is disabled as of 2004 and dates after that? And what we look at here is he talked about a lot of evidence, and one of the very points the ALJ made in her decision was a lot of the evidence in this case that seems to be important evidence is all prior to her alleged onset date. She saw Dr. Kiyoski before her alleged onset date. All those doctors that she's mentioning, that he mentioned there, are people she saw prior to her onset date. After her onset date of 1104, her treatment is exclusively with Dr. Hadland and Dr. Iwu. And Dr. Iwu, each time that Dr. Iwu saw her, said, I did not even examine her. So Dr. Iwu is a perfect example of a doctor who simply accepts the subjective complaints of the claimant and makes findings based on those subjective complaints. And the court has said numerous times that that's not acceptable.
Who prescribed the morphine?
I would have to guess that's Iwu, but Judge Sykes, you were absolutely correct about that. As he said, all we know about the morphine is that she testified at the hearing that she's recently been put on morphine. I don't know what day of the week the hearing was held, but she said in her testimony, I started it on Saturday. So even at the time of the hearing, if she is truly on morphine, which all we have is her testimony on that, she's been on it for 4 or 5 days. So there is no medical record. As of the last medical record with Dr. Iwu, which I think is from April 07, she's still on the methadone. And the hearing takes place in May 07. So if there's no medical record that shows she has been switched from methadone to
morphine. You know that we have cases that say that it's improbable that a claimant would undergo such heavy doses of those sorts of drugs in order to increase the chances of obtaining disability benefits, or that doctors who are not in jail would prescribe these treatments if they thought, you know, she were faking.
Yes, Judge, and there's a very good point to be made on that, and one of the points he made was about rheumatologists in this case. Yes, Dr. Steiner is not a rheumatologist. He is the medical expert in that case. But neither is Dr. Iwu, and neither is Dr. Hadlin. The rheumatologist in this case is Dr. Tierney. Dr. Tierney saw her in 1998, and then Dr. Tierney, on a referral from Dr. Hadland, saw her again in the summer of 2005. And to make that point again, that there's really no change in the claimant's condition, Dr. Tierney says basically the same things in 2005 that he said in 1998. And one of the things he says that's very consistent with Dr. Steiner's medical expert testimony is that she should not be on these drugs. Dr. Steiner testified that methadone and morphine are drugs that are not typically used in fibromyalgia cases. Dr. Tierney, when he saw her in the summer of 2005, said, why are you on these things? You're telling me that these things aren't working. Why are you taking them?
That's the rheumatologist's testimony?
That's the rheumatologist's report. The rheumatologist submitted a report in August of 2005.
Questioning this medication regimen.
He questioned Ms. Goble, and this is one of the inconsistencies that the ALJ dealt with throughout the course of this case. Ms. Goble is typically going into her doctors and saying, these medications don't work for me, refill my medication. And that's one of the problems I think the ALJ had with this case is, again, this inconsistency about these medications. And when she sees Tierney, she makes the same observation. I'm on methadone, I'm on, I think it's Skalaxin, I'm on Ambien, and none of these are helping me. And Dr. Tierney says, then why are you on them? And Dr. Tierney said pretty much exactly the same thing in 1998 that he said in 2005, which is not that this person needs to be on methadone or morphine or Skalaxin. It's that she needs to be on a graded exercise program. And that is something that, in the record, it seems like even when IWU recommends that, Ms. Goble's not interested in that.
Well, then we have an issue here of the ALJ rejecting Goble's allegations of pain and that kind of thing and saying that she was alert and oriented and pleasant and cooperative, and yet we don't have any medical experts that they say that's inconsistent with someone who has chronic pain, disabling back pain. I mean, one can appear alert during a visit. That doesn't mean one doesn't have that pain, does it?
No, but I think, Judge, what impressed the ALJ about that was, here's a person who came into her doctors and said, they said, rate your pain today. And she said, my pain is at an 8 or a 9. And then the doctors are observing her and saying, she looks alert. She's in very good shape. Just to go back to some of those things, even before the onset date, right before that, Kiyoski said, in 603, she's got this onset date of November 04. In 603, she sees Kiyoski, and she brings up disability, and Kiyoski says, I think it's a little early to be talking about disability. So he's certainly not endorsing it at that time. In 903, she sees Dr. Hadland, her treating physician. He says she's well-tanned and does not appear to be in a great deal of distress. After that, she has no treatment. Both our briefs have no evidence discussed between September of 2003 and July of 2004. This is the period that she is in Utah. She is not on any medication, and she says her condition improved. And then shortly after that, she alleges disability. And after that, the only doctors she sees are Hadland and IWU and that one referral to Tierney. So everything after 2004 is concentrated on the fibromyalgia. In fact, Tierney specifically says the pain that she's complaining of is not being produced by the back problem or the degenerative disc problem. The other point that I think the ALJ made that's a very good point and I think is quite germane to a fibromyalgia case is, again, this contradiction between what Ms. Goble is saying and what the doctors are finding. This is a person who testified she doesn't sleep at all, and then she backs up a little bit and says, well, I've never gotten any REM sleep, I've never gotten any deep sleep. And the ALJ noted that despite seeing all these doctors, Dr. Gomez, Dr. Weakland, Dr. Kiyoski, Dr. Hadland, Dr. Iwu, there's not a single observation in this record that this person ever appeared fatigued or tired. And with that, I see my time is up, so I would ask the court to affirm the ALJ's decision.
Well, your time isn't up. You have more minutes, but you don't have to take it. No.
Okay. I'm ready for any more questions, and if not, I would just ask you to affirm the ALJ's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barton.
Your Honors, there's a lot here, and I think it's odd that so much was focused on the evidence prior to alleged onset date. The doctors didn't endorse. He says the doctors didn't endorse this. Well, I don't either. Mrs. Goble doesn't either. Before her claimed onset date, she doesn't claim she was disabled. After, she does, of course. He points out, well, the only doctors that have treated her during the relevant period of time are Hadlin and Iwell. That's true, and they both say that she's disabled. I read you the portions of the letters. They were definite about this. Those are the only doctors that saw her, examined her, treat her. They feel she's disabled. Well, I shouldn't say the only doctor, because there was a psychologist, I would remind you again, who said on a psychological basis she can't take the stress of work, she can't, and also can't concentrate enough. That was Social Security's expert who said that. That's important. So far, I don't know about the treatment, if it's appropriate for fibromyalgia or not. That's really not relevant. It's the treatment they were giving her. It's unfortunate if she was getting inappropriate treatment, but it doesn't mean she wasn't disabled. The fact of the matter is they don't give out such medication, strong narcotics, unless somebody's really in a lot of pain. None of her doctors said she was not in pain or didn't appear to be in pain. What counsel basically is doing, I think, is really what the ALJ did. It was picked out the reference here or there, feeling good today or this or that or the other. That's not what you're supposed to do, and I think that's really what the ALJ did. So far, I'm sorry.
If the record suggests that she was being overtreated,
she may have been,
or improperly treated, that's certainly relevant.
Well, it's relevant only in the sense that there's some that without that treatment she might have been fine, but there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence whatsoever. There's plenty of evidence.
Dr. Tierney, is it Tierney?
Tierney.
Is his report suggestive treatment?
He didn't testify. He did not testify. Evidently, he felt that he would give her some different treatment, but this was not anything like testimony from Dr. Tierney. This is just his recommendation. Maybe she would have been better off if she followed that. She didn't. She didn't, and I think even just taking the methadone is something that diminishes concentration so much that someone really, in many cases, can't work because of that. It may well be that she's not getting proper treatment. She got the treatment she could afford. I think she did the best. The whole idea, it's bizarre. It's bizarre to think that someone would do all of this who wasn't disabled. Why on earth would someone do this? And so far as counsel mentioned contradictions between the claimant and her doctors, there's no contradiction between Dr. Iwu and the claimant or Dr. Hedlund and the claimant. They both definitely felt she was disabled. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks to Mr. Martin, Mr. Balanoff. Case will be taken under advisement. We go on to